welcome to Rewatchable episode number 315. Today we're talking Agent Carter, season 2, episode 9, A Little Song and Dance. My name is Danielle and I'm going to be your host for today, and I'm so excited to jump into everything about this episode. But before we do, I want to tell you how you can get in contact with us, because we love when you get in contact with us. You can email us at rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com. You can tweet at us at re_watchable. You can Tumblr us. We're at rewatchablepodcast.tumblr.com. And you can also join our Facebook group. We're called Rewatchables Rewinders. Just search for that on Facebook and you should be able to find us and our little community right away. As I mentioned, my name is Danielle, and I'm going to be your host for today. It would be a very boring podcast if it was just me talking to myself about this episode. So we have another superfan and two newbies with us today. Please welcome superfan Kristen and newbies Brittany and Nassim.
Hi.
Yay.
Hello.
My voice sounds a little bit more normal this week than it did last week. I really apologize to everyone who had to hear last week's episode because it sounded like a car that was barely driving.
Oh. I didn't notice that either. I thought you sounded wonderful, but it's always nice to have your normal voice too.
It was just creaky. I'm still a little bit creaky, but not so much. I think this is actually my ideal voice because I sound like a little bit sultry.
You got the husky.
Not squeaky as usual.
Well, speaking of voices, we like to do fun facts at the top of every Rewatchable episode, just so you can get used to all of the host's voices so you can kind of distinguish us. And since we heard your voice first, Nassim, would you like to give us your fun fact?
Yeah, I'll just piggyback off of my fun fact last week. See, this is why it's good to be here 2 weeks in a row. Mm-hmm. But I've been driving and I drove on the left lane the past 2 days. I'm very proud of myself because I did not die and I was able to pass trucks and stuff, which is great.
Terrifying.
So, yeah. Although last night I had to drive like in a very dark highway and that was kind of creepy. But I made it and it's great. I feel like a very empowered woman.
That's awesome. That's so exciting. And yeah, driving the left lane next to trucks, I hate doing that all the time. Mm. The worst is being sandwiched in between trucks when you're driving.
Oh, God.
Ugh, not great.
I never want to be in that situation.
I hate to scare you off of driving, I guess. But
I was going to say, I hate when semis are merging and there's like only two lanes and you're like, I can't move any further. Like, yeah, that's the worst. I hate semis.
This truck was like winding around, like he kept like kind of slipping off the lane and I was continued to be scared that he was just going to smash me into the wall. But that did not happen. Everything's good.
And you're here with your sultry voice and we are very happy about it.
Yes, I'm here.
Kristen, would you like to give us your fun fact next?
Well, my fun fact is that yesterday was my mom's birthday, and so I got to spend the whole day just hanging out with my mom and my niece and my sister, and we had a girls' day, and we got pedicures and saw a movie, and it was just really delightful. And then I come home and find out that Eliza Taylor and Bob Morley, a.k.a. Clark and Bellamy on The 100, got married. They got married. We didn't even know they were dating.
Okay, that was going to be my first question.
Nobody knew they were dating. They've been keeping it like hush hush. And everybody thought they had both been hacked. Because nobody, like, I mean, their chemistry on the show is really, really evident. And people have been talking about it. And the Bellark shippers are crazy. You know, it's a thing. Their chemistry is really there. But they've never hinted that they were dating, like, at all. And so everybody thought they had both been hacked. And then like Jason Rothenberg tweeted and was like, congratulations, you two. Like, I'm so glad that, you know, the world knows now. And like, it's kind of insane. But I was like, wait, what? I thought it was a joke. I thought they were messing around. I thought somebody had gotten hacked. You know, I didn't know what to think. But I was like, hey. That's good fun. Good.
This is just going to make fandom conspiracy theories so annoying for the next decade.
I know, right?
Maybe they're dating like them.
That's my second question. Because after one of our writers posted it in the Hypeable Slack channel that this had happened. And so one of the first things I did this morning was like check out their Twitter announcements. And like, I know that things are bad with shippers, but like both of their announcements had like a caveat in it. Like, oh, this is the happiest day of my life. I'm so excited to spend the rest of my life with this person. Dear fans, like, please be respectful and not like reply to us with hateful messages. What? How?
Well, okay. The people who like Clark and Bellamy together on the show.
Yes.
Are they're all, they have been basically at war with the people who liked Clark and Lexa. Yes.
Right.
So everyone who is a Lexa Clexa shipper, right. They've been like extremely upset and angry every time Clark has been pushed towards any male on the show because they consider it erasure of her, of the side of her that's attracted to girls, which honestly, we don't even know if she's bisexual. She may be pan. She's Clark. I mean, we don't actually know.
Right.
She never actually said what her sexuality is because it doesn't really matter because they're running for their lives three quarters of the time.
But these people go after the actors, yeah. And then they go after them, like...
Well, they say that, like, I honestly, this morning already, was not looking for it, but it came across my timeline. Somebody talking about how this was insensitive of them to get married during Pride Month and how it was, like, a jab to the heart of all the people who wanted
please.
To...
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Come on. Twisted, like...
That is how twisted this is in some people's hearts. Like, I know it's because they love Lexa, and honestly, I loved Lexa, and I have no issues with the Clexa shippers, like, people who like that pairing. There's no problem with that. It's when they take it too far, and that's more or less what's happened. But it's I'm really happy for the two of them because they're both charming, loving, lovely people.
Yeah.
But it's really a shame that they have to be like, be respectful, be kind
in their exciting announcement post.
Yeah. Like, that respect our privacy, blah, blah, blah. Like, yeah, they have to caveat everything, which I'm sure is why they kept it a secret because they've been dealing with this for a long time now. And so, but yeah, it is good news. It's delightful that, I love them, so I'm just really happy for them.
Well, that was quite the fun fact, and thank you for clarifying some of that for me because it's
you're
still,
welcome.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's crazy.
Brittany, what is your fun fact for this week?
I didn't know any of that happened until 1 minute ago, so that was nice. I guess I live in a bubble where the 100 fandom doesn't really interfere, which is nice to know that I can still enjoy Twitter without that coming into my purview. But my fun fact is that I'm watching The Family Dog this weekend, and he is a little bit of like an oddball. We don't really know, like, you know, what goes on in his little brain. But every time I come over, it doesn't matter if I'm just like swinging by my parents' house after work or just like coming for a night or whatever. He only brings out the toy that I gave him for Christmas.
Aww.
Like, he has hundreds, and I'm not even joking, hundreds of toys, but he always brings out this little, it's like this little llama with like packages on its back. And he always brings it out when I come over, like ever since this past Christmas. And I'm just looking at it laying on the floor thinking, what a smart dog. Oh, that's cute.
Aw, that's so cute. He's like, thank you for my wonderful gift.
Like, I associate you with this toy, so here it is.
I love that. That's so great. So, Brittany, you took my fun fact, sort of, last week, in that we finally met in person, and I can confirm to the entire world that Brittany is a real person. She actually exists, although we don't have any photographic evidence of this.
That is true.
Yeah. We were together for quite a few hours, and it wasn't until we said goodbye and started walking away that I was like, shit, we didn't get a photo.
I know. I like realized it when I got on the train. I was like, oh, wow, we did not, do that right.
No. We were all about the ramen and then the cookies and then sitting in the Hell's Kitchen Park.
Mm-hmm. Watching those children play in the dirt.
Oh my God, they were so stressful. But I guess that's part of my wider fun fact is that I was in New York City last week for the big book expo, as well as my Marvel tour of New York City. And I can confirm that it was amazing. It was one of the best trips I've ever had. And seeing Brittany was definitely a huge part of that. And I will have an article up on Hypeable soon-ish about my Marvel adventures because I basically hit everything. And on the Saturday alone, I walked 18 miles. So there's a lot to show from that. The blisters on my feet are finally receding, so it's all good.
That is crazy. 18 miles is a lot. Like, I mean, that's a lot.
It was a lot.
But I'm sure once you like get started, it's just fun. Like, you're not really thinking about, oh, I'm walking a lot. Like, oh, this is a lot of walking. It's just like, oh, I have to get to this. I have to do this. And so then it's like, poof, 18 miles later.
Yeah, no, that was definitely how it was for a lot of it. And then, like, I enjoy walking through neighborhoods and getting to know a city that way, like seeing the people and all that. But then the other part of it was like, man, I'm too poor. I can't be taken like transportation everywhere. So I have 2 feet. I'm going to walk it.
Hey, you do what you got to do. That's awesome, though. That's awesome.
Yep. So it was great. And one of the stops was me on the Brooklyn Bridge pretending to be Peggy Carter. I did not cry, which I was very surprised about. But if anyone wants to see a sneak peek of that photo, it's actually in our Facebook group right now. If you want to go check it, nudge, nudge. But speaking of Agent Carter, I really want to get into talking about this week's episode because there is a lot to discuss here. And I am very, very excited to have the panel that we have today for this episode. It's kind of like a dream panel for me. So before we get started, I do want to read out Ariana's recap for this episode, just to jog everyone's memories. So in this episode, our heroes are singing a new tune when Peggy and her boys decide to team up with Red Foreman following their near-death desert adventures. Meanwhile, Peggy and Jarvis have a very relatable and emotionally cathartic road trip fight on the side of a dirt road, and Jack Thompson flirts his way through multiple double crossings. Talk about some blonde ambition. All right, so the thing I want to discuss first, and I mean, it's at the very beginning of the episode, which is very helpful, is the musical song and dance number. Before getting to newbie reactions, Kristen, the first time you saw this episode, which, by the way, this episode and the season finale aired back to back in the same night, so everyone was kind of already positioned for this to be at least the end of the season, and positioned for it to be big. But Kristen, do you remember how you felt seeing this musical number for the first time?
I just remember, like, it comes on, it's black and white, and I'm like, okay, where are we going with this? And then, like, the whole, like, musical number starts, and you start to hear Sousa's voice, and I was just like, what show am I watching? Like, hold on a minute, because it's such a departure from, like, the show. It's especially in second season, because they're dealing with all of this, like, heavy scientific stuff and, like, end of the world and, you know, like, it's kind of, like, insane how heavy it's been. And then you get this song and dance number that is so wonderful, and you're just like, wait, hold on. What are we doing? And then it kind of takes you a minute, and you're like, okay, where did we leave Peggy? Oh, yeah, they knocked her out. Okay. All right. So that's where we are. All right. But I remember just being like, what is happening right now? And being really, really excited about Sousa because he has a really pretty voice.
He does have a really pretty voice. Yeah, I remember kind of being the same way. I feel like I knew something to the effect that this was going to happen, but definitely not in the way that it did. And seeing Angie was a wonderful surprise as well. And I also didn't realize that they could all sing as well as they could. So seeing it again this time, I've been excited for this episode all season and waiting for it. And actually, I've been trying to slightly plan ahead for it. And I was telling Brittany before we started recording that, like, I really wanted her on this episode for this reason. Mm-hmm. So I've been trying to, like, coordinate it where she wasn't completely overloaded and that maybe she could be on for this episode. So, Brittany, are you happy to have been on this episode, or was I assuming wrongly that you would enjoy this musical number?
Well, so when the episode opened, my first thought was that this was going to be the whole episode. Like, the whole episode was going to be a musical. And I was like, that's really ambitious for a penultimate season episode when you don't know if you're coming back, that you would waste this amount of time.
I didn't even consider that
musical episode.
Wow.
And then when she woke up, I was like, oh, okay, thank God. Mainly just for plotting purposes, I was like, okay, I'm glad this is over. But would have watched an entire musical episode because it was very, very good. I really thoroughly enjoyed it. Was not expecting that that was the reason why you wanted me on this episode. And in fact, if the musical did not happen, the conversation between Peggy and Jarvis would have been the reason I thought you wanted me on this episode, because that, like, completely destroyed me.
Yeah.
But
focusing- and I mean, you actually predicted that there would be, or I think you were kind of like throwing it away, but you were predicting that there would be an actual musical number.
Well, that's what I was freaking out about when I heard it. I was like, oh my God, we predicted this.
Yeah. I know.
The only part of it that didn't come true is that Jarvis didn't sing. He just kind of showed up and was like, Miss Kata.
Oh, I know. That was like really disappointing.
I'm sorry.
But I did love that he had all, like, the showgirls around him.
And one of them was Anna.
One of them was Anna.
I did watch the whole musical number again because I feel like I was watching it and I was like, wait, what just happened? And then I finished the episode and then I went back and I'm like, I think I need to watch that again because I'm not quite sure I took in everything that was happening.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I really enjoyed it. And then immediately, of course, because we're at the end of the season, I went directly to the Wikipedia page just for this episode. And I was like very cautious about not reading what was coming. And I wanted to know who directed it, who wrote it, was the song original, all of this stuff. And I unpacked it all, which was great. And actually, more so with the, I know that this person did not write it, but it's a very similar theme-wise. So the director of this episode is Jennifer Getzinger, who directed my all-time favorite Mad Men episode, which is very Peggy and Dawn-centric, The Suitcase. And I was just like, oh my God, this, Peggy, ha, two Peggies. So the Peggy and Jarvis scene plays very much like the Peggy and Dawn scene in it. And I was like, oh my God, this woman just had, well, first of all, this woman's like very good at her job. But I was just like, oh, that's a really fun fact that she, you know, directed just this like fantastic interaction between Peggy and Dawn and then Peggy and Jarvis in the desert. So that was great. And then, of course, I looked up to see if this was an original song, which, of course, it was.
Yep.
So that was fun. And David Zippel also wrote Star Spangled Man. So.
I did not know that. So thank you for doing your research.
Oh, yes. When it comes to a musical number, I'm nothing but thorough.
Much appreciated.
They apparently billed this as like a Dancing with the Stars like thing because the dancers are from Dancing with the Stars, like older an older cast. But I guess some of like the dancers who like, you know, do those fun jazzy opening numbers. But yeah, they were Dancing with the Stars people.
Okay, the marketing for this show was so bad that I don't even remember that. And I feel like
I don't know if they like completely build it as that, but like the Wikipedia page was just like, yeah, so they're from Dancing with the Stars, you know, if you recognize any of them.
I mean, considering that both these shows aired on ABC and yeah. Dancing with the Stars usually happens around the winter or springtime, doesn't it?
Yeah, so it says in like, the wiki page that it was dubbed an informal crossover with Dancing with the Stars
and God.
Many of the professional dancers from the series.
That is bananas.
Yeah, I don't remember any of that ever. And I feel like while it may not have enticed people to watch, I feel like that's a missed angle for them. Like, oh, and by the way, you know, Dancing with the Stars people are going to be on this episode of Agent Carter. Like, I feel like they could have, like, used that or something. Yeah, I don't remember.
An Entertainment Weekly article written by Natalie Abrams was titled Agent Carter, Lindsay Fonseca to return for dreamy Dancing with the Stars crossover.
I don't remember any of that. That is so funny.
I remember the Lindsay Fonseca part, but I don't remember the Dancing with the Stars part.
That is so funny.
Well, clearly the crossover failed because
nobody knew about
it. Come back for a third season.
I mean, just another example of how well done the marketing was for this show.
Also, another fun fact, unrelated to the musical portion of this, I saw the end of this episode live when it was airing.
What?
Like I said, my dad has watched this show and would talk about it all the time. And
the show with the girl.
So the end of this episode is the only scene I've ever seen from Agent Carter. And I didn't know when it was going to happen. All I remembered was that Chad Michael Murray was in it. It was dark and there was a car and it was then talking at the car at the end of the episode. So I like remember none of the lines, nothing, but I remember coming home from something and coming into the living room and he was watching it and I sat down on the couch and like, he was just like, well, it ends tomorrow. Like that was like it, because the finale, like you said, it was back to back and he was like, oh, well, it's going to end. Like this is almost the finale. And I was like, oh, okay, whatever. And then I like, went upstairs and did something else.
Oh my gosh.
I watched that scene.
Isn't that so weird though? That happens with me on TV occasionally. Like I'll be flipping channels and I'll watch like a scene of something. And then like 5 years later, I'll like watch the show, like binge watch the show. And I'm like, oh, I've seen this scene. Like, oh, this is that scene. Like this is the one that I knew was in the show somewhere and I had no idea where. And there it is. That happens to me. And it's like so weird. It's so cool.
I, on the other hand, never even remember things I've seen multiple times.
Because I think my big thing was, like, I remember saying to him, I'm like, Chad Michael Murray's in this show? Like, that's the only thing that I remember. And, like, even knew going into this show. I was like, oh, this is the show that Chad Michael Murray's in, and I don't know how or why he's in it, but I know he's there.
I feel like that's just the general reaction of everyone to Agent Carter. Like,
yeah.
Chad Michael Murray?
Wait, what?
Yeah, exactly. Nassim. Did you enjoy this musical sequence? I know you said that it was uncanny how you had both predicted it. But for a musical, do you think it did its job?
Well, I don't think I predicted it, but someone else did last episode.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, the greatest job it did is it put me firmly on the Sousa train.
Yeah.
Like, Wilkes who? Like, the moment he started to do his little dance and sing, I was like, okay, yep, this is so much better. I'm sorry. Firmly on the Sousa ship.
His voice was very smooth. Like,
so, like, he has a bit of that, like, crooner feel, that crooner vibe to him. And it just, he has a really pretty voice. Very pretty singing voice.
Ariana put a note in the doc, and I didn't notice this the first time the musical number happened. There are things I've noticed on rewatches, but she asks the question, during this musical number, Sousa puts aside his crutch and is able to just like start dancing around and all of that. And her question is this ableist? Is it odd? Was it an odd choice for them to do it? Even though them dancing together is wonderful. was it maybe not the best choice to have him kind of just throw that away? And this is all in Peggy's head. So is she dreaming of him as an able person?
I think the biggest issue for me is that this is Peggy's dream.
Mm-hmm.
If this was Sousa dreaming this and him throwing his crutch away, then I feel like it would be a little less ableist, because maybe he's just envisioning a future in which he didn't have it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But because it's Peggy,
his ideal.
Yeah, but because it's Peggy, it kind of feels a little bit icky. Like, you're like, oh, yeah, okay. Because it definitely didn't occur to me, but I'm really glad she pointed it out, because it is kind of blatant and there and something to think about. I kind of wish that maybe they hadn't, like, maybe he had just been able to work with his crutch in the scene, because it's unfortunately, I mean, it is a part of Sousa's character, so there's no reason why he should have to ditch his crutch and, you know, just whatever. It's also a dream sequence, so it's hard to be like, yes, it's, you know, it has to be 100% factual, because it's, you know, even though it's a dream sequence. So I definitely see her point, and I think it's one of those things that's interesting to think about, and you need to, like, kind of look at how you saw the scene. And it's, you know, I'm glad that that Ariana is able to kind of, like, make me aware of it when I didn't necessarily notice it before.
Yeah, I didn't notice it, but honestly, I think looking back, it's kind of lazy, because it would have been even just a more interesting choreography to see him dance with the crutches,
mm-hmm.
and to kind of use them as a part of his choreography. I think that it feels like lazy writing, like, oh yeah, everyone's gonna dance and sing, oh, but wait, but Sousa, whatever, he doesn't have them here. You know, it feels lazy.
Yeah, and it's never really been played up as it being a huge problem before. Like, it's but like, he's on all the missions, he's, you know, running around, he's like making his way through everything without it being brought to everyone's, like, attention all the time, you know? So I agree. I think they could have just left it as part of his character and not completely erased it.
The only other thing about this dream sequence, I mean, I loved it. I love the musical number. But the only other thing that struck me more this time than I think it did in the past was for this to be Peggy's dream. And it starts with a really interesting conversation between her and her brother. But for then it to go into, like, rather than talking about, like, what are you going to do about the predicament that you are in terms of, like, the Whitney Frost stuff, she's dreaming about a musical number about, like, which guy to choose. That's not to say that, like, it is not a feminist thing for Peggy to want romance and, like, want a partner. But with everything going on, it struck me slightly odd that in this situation, after just seeing Wilkes go not so great, and have, like, Daniel obviously working alongside her, that, like, her brain would go to, yes, let's talk about, like, who's she going to choose in the love triangle? Did that strike anyone else? Does it feel weird? Am I just kind of out of my depth here?
Yeah, it's a little bit, well, I mean, I think I accepted it because it was kind of like, this is such a frivolous alternate universe,
mm-hmm.
that it's kind of hilarious, because shortly before I was very, like, emotionally heavy with Michael and everything. And then it just goes to this very frivolous opposite. So, I mean, I guess you can justify it like that. But it is a little bit strange, because Peggy in real time doesn't seem to even really be that conscious of those dynamics, because it's just not that relevant. One thing that I thought was funny, though, was that the way that she goes from Wilkes to Sousa, and then Angie pulls her away and is like, who are you going to choose? And it seems to be kind of like she's one of the options, which I thought Angie, Peggy, shippers are probably going to love.
Oh, they went nuts. I mean, besides the fact that Angie has not been in this season, and really for no good reason. I remember when they were filming this, Lindsay Fonseca was being asked, like, why aren't you in it? To which she replied, she just didn't get the call. Like, they just didn't write her in. She would have been able and willing to do it, but they just didn't bring her along. So everyone was really excited to see her back in this. And then to have like that sort of nod to like, who are you going to choose? It could be me. That definitely made the Cardinale fans go crazy.
I think what bothered me the most about it being like, oh, you know, this is about two, like, you know, her choosing, was when I still thought that this was going to be a musical episode. So when the dream ended, I think, and I watched it again, it bothered me less. But as I was watching it, I was like, are you kidding me? Like, why are we doing this? Because like, I was still kind of already like up in a huff about like, you know, the plotting and pacing of like last week's episodes. I mean, like, why would Jarvis do this? Blah, 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 blah. And then they resolve all of that later in this episode. So I was already mad that we were like on that train of like storytelling. And I was like, why now are we introducing A, a musical episode, and B, it being about Peggy choosing between two people or three people. And so when it ended and then the whole rest of the episode played out, I was a little bit more okay with it. Mm-hmm. So like, it's fine. It's a dream. She can, you know, I mean, she's not thinking about this at the forefront of her mind, but it is buried somewhere in her subconscious that
sure.
This is the thing that's going on. So it makes a little bit more sense.
I was going to say, I think because Peggy refuses to give it any brain space in her conscious everyday thoughts, like she's got enough going on. She's not actually thinking about all of this, that it kind of makes a little sense that it would come through in her subconscious. Like, okay, but this is a thing that's happening. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's, mm-hmm. it's not something she's worried about or even thinking about because she's got so much else going on, but it is kind of back there somewhere that, you know, she's kind of in this predicament because Susan and Wilkes are both decent dudes. So we'll figure it out later. I mean, it's not a priority for her, but I can see why her subconscious maybe has something floating around in there.
Definitely. I mean, that makes complete sense. I didn't think about it like that, but yeah, that makes sense. Any other notes on this musical dream sequence? I forgot that Dottie showed up, so that was a fun thing for me.
She's always in her head.
Yes, she's always in her head.
I truly love Jarvis's entrance. Like, I know we kind of talked about it, but just mm-hmm. with all the showgirls and him just like, it's so great. It's so great. I love it.
After hearing Brittany's prediction, I didn't completely remember how the musical number went. So I was like, oh, where's Jarvis? Like, when is he going to start singing? And then he showed up and I was like, oh yeah, he doesn't sing. Well, now I'm disappointed.
Yeah.
So thanks a lot, Brittany.
I was a little upset about that, but that's okay. We still got him in his, you know, coat and tails and top hat. So
we did. I want to back up slightly to the like black and white. Like, this very much felt like a Wizard of Oz kind of sequence, and I think they did that on purpose, going from black and white to the color. But to go back to the black and white, we see Michael again. We haven't seen him in quite a few episodes, obviously, because, I mean, they had the letter delivered to Peg's parents' houses that he died. Was anyone surprised to see him? Has anyone actually wanted more about him as we were going along? Or was it just like a really nice moment to see him in her dream?
Well, at first I couldn't tell, because we've only seen them both once, if it was Michael or her like ex-fiance.
Fred.
Yeah. So when she was just like walking in, I was like, oh, okay, like this is Michael. But like when I first like saw him, I was like, which one are you? I was kind of excited that he was brought back into the mix, because I think that he weighs heavy on Peg as she is going through her career and the choices that she made. And like, he's a big part of what got her to the point of being tied up in the back of a van right now, because, you know, he set her on this path, and it's a path that she loves and wants to be on, but at the same time, these people are in her orbit are getting roped into things and getting in trouble and are making choices that she probably feels partially responsible for, as we kind of touched on last week. So seeing him made a lot of sense before it broke out into Song and Dance that like he is buried in all of this for her. So I agree, I wish we got a little bit more of him throughout the season, especially after we had that nice flashback episode where we learned more about how Peggy was shaped as a person. And I think we would get more of that should the show continue on Disney Plus. Hint, hint, Disney.
Yep, rewatchable effect.
I think we, in a third season, that would be a path to go down with a lot of emphasis, I think.
Just the background on the two of them.
Mm-hmm.
I just wish they looked more like each other. Like, I would never imagine that they're related. I feel like he's so, like, willowy.
He looks more related to Jack Thompson to me.
Yes, yes. And I mean, obviously, like, the siblings look different. They don't all have to look the same. Mm-hmm. But I thought it would have been cute if they'd, like, looked a lot like each other. Like, I don't know.
Fair. All right, let's move on because there is quite a bit more to talk about in this episode. Let's talk about Wilkes really quickly because we see him waking up in the back of Whitney's car. The last time we saw him, he kind of got sucked into that black hole and then sort of spit back out. And he doesn't seem to have the same sort of like cutting and reckless personality, I guess, to him anymore. At this point, he's just scared, but more of being a danger to people rather than what's happening to him. And then later in the episode, he is talking to Peggy and he clarifies that everything he did, like him being a jerk, like all the decisions he made was him and it wasn't the Zero Matter or like a result of that. Does that end the debate that we've all kind of been having over the last few episodes about his agency or whether his decisions are coming up from the Zero Matter, or is there still room to think that maybe he was affected by the Zero Matter really without him knowing just to what extent?
No, and I'm good with that. I like the idea that it was all him. I mean, I wish he'd been better and had better judgment. But I think it was a very authentic way of viewing it. And also Peggy having to realize that, you know, people do dumb things when they're in that situation and that she kind of just has to accept that maybe he's not as good as she thought he was.
I think when I first watched that scene, and even this time watching it, my first instinct wasn't that he was telling her that, like, everything that he, all the choices he's made were dark matter, whatever. But that just that last one, like the one where he holds her up at gunpoint and like all of that, like I thought he was trying to tell her like I knew what I had to do. Like, and it's not that he was trying to do anything particularly evil or nefarious, but he knew what he needed to get to a position where, like, because even now, he's got the dark matter in him still, and he's not trying to hurt people. Like, he keeps telling Whitney, like, let me go. Like, let me go to the middle of the desert so I can get away from people and try not to hurt people. So, like, I see what you mean here, like, that maybe he's telling her, like, all of these choices have been my own. But I kind of fall to the, he was telling her that choice was mine and that maybe the dark matter has affected him in general, but he's still in his right mind. Like, I'm still making choices, whether or not it's shadowing those choices or whether or not it's affecting me as I make them is one thing, but these are still things I'm choosing. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It's difficult for sure.
Yeah, I think maybe the lines between what was Wilkes before the Zero Matter versus what is Wilkes with the Zero Matter are very blurred. And we didn't know him before the Zero Matter, so we don't know what kind of character or person he was, especially like as at least I've been saying for the past couple episodes, it's like, I don't have a sense of, you know, trusting this character at all because I had suspicions about him when he first came onto the scene. So it's like, it's not like I'm coming from a place of like, oh, that's something that old Wilkes would have done and not something that Wilkes with Zero Matter would have done. So we kind of just have to take the character's word for it. Mm-hmm. I do think that there has been an effect on him more recently, but like just even watching his conversation with Anna, I think it's just like a huge like grounding moment for him as like what we would expect a, like him as a person would be like outside. I know we had
like that's a benchmark.
Yeah, we had the meeting with him and Peggy, but like that's that had business behind it. So his situation with Anna was like, oh, I'm hungry. Here's a person I can talk to who, like, you know, kind of is an innocent in all of this. And I feel like that's where we got the most like boiled down version of who Wilkes is, but it's just not enough to really be like, oh, he's affected. Oh, he's not affected and his decision-making. And I agree with what Nassim said. I was fine with him just being like, you know, nope, this is, these were my decisions. This is how it was. This is who I am. And you need to roll with that. And I was okay with it because I really don't have strong feelings about him right now, one way or another, beyond the fact that Peggy and him should never be together.
I mean, I agree with that for sure. Okay. Yeah. I just wanted to check in on with that. Cause like I said, we've been talking about it for quite a while now. And I thought it was a line that stuck out to me more this time because of our discussions than ever before. So yeah, he's sick. And then Whitney starts experimenting on him because of course. But while that is all happening, or kind of before she brings him back to the dump, Peggy and
waste
Jarvis
management facility.
I'm sorry. Yes. The waste management facility.
Sorry. I had to. And I was like, crap, where's the mute button? I have to correct her.
I was trying to think of the word, but I couldn't get there. So the stuff with Wilkes kind of felt like interludes in between these really great scenes with Peggy and Jarvis. So Peggy is very obviously frustrated with Jarvis and she lets out her frustration on him and he on her in what is probably one of the strongest scenes of the entire series because they're actually talking and getting to the root of what makes each other tick and how that's not necessarily like always a good thing. Brittany, I know that you loved this scene. Was the conversation satisfying for you in terms of all of the things you pointed out last week about Jarvis's actions and how they would need to address those in some way? Was this scene a good way of doing that?
Absolutely. I felt like I didn't know what I wanted. All I knew was that I thought that they were going to bury this.
Mm-hmm.
And it would have been like, I thought that they would have woken up in the back of the truck or at whatever location that they ended up at and would have had to jump into like, you know, we have to get out of here. And there would have been guns at their heads, you know, and like, it would have just moved on. And there would have been probably a little bit of an exchange of Jarvis being like, I can't believe I did that. Or like, Peggy being like, you know, you need to not be on these missions anymore or whatever. Like it would have just been a very small scene. But to get this was like beyond what I ever imagined. So just Peggy being angry, I think not only at Jarvis, but at herself in a way, was just her anger and just like coldness to him in the back of the van being like, untie yourself, we're getting out of here. And just not being ready to hear or field an apology or, you know, thought process from him was just very telling of, you know, where she is. She needs to focus on moving forward and getting the work done and getting them out of this situation. But at the same time, she still needs to deal with everything that just happened. And then the scene with them, once they get out of the van and they're walking, and just the back and forth between them was just so good. And so just that relationship was just on full display of what it means to each of them and the costs that both of them really didn't weigh, I think, when they decided to start going on what Jarvis views as adventures and Peggy views as her life, basically. So I loved it. I loved every single second of it. I would watch the whole episode of them just doing stuff like that. And it was very well written, I think, too.
I also kind of love that, like, they go at each other and neither one is holding back. Like, they're giving each other all the thoughts in their brain. And then it just kind of ends. Like, he tells her about Anna. She, you know, apologizes because she doesn't know. She's not really apologizing because she doesn't regret telling him what she just did, but she also sees how fragile he is and what's going on with him and Anna, and now that she can't have kids. Like, it's not, neither one of them lingers in their anger longer than they need to. Like, they both confront what's happened, what the position he's put them in, you know, everything that happened in the last episode. They're able to, like, go at it, get it out of their system, let each other know what the biggest disappointment out of all of this is, and then go back to, okay, now we have to keep going. This guy is coming for us. Here comes the truck. Let's go. Like, I love that. While this is a really interesting and really important scene for them, like, they're also able to move past it and say, okay, here we go. Let's keep going.
I mean, that's relationship goals, not like for any type of relationship, to be able to deal with very justified anger that way.
Yeah.
I really love this conversation. It's like, it's a very good, I mean, this is good writing when you can have characters have misunderstandings, but then they talk about it and then they are able to resolve it in a way that is, you know, they make mistakes throughout the conversation. It's flawed. They both have misconceptions about each other, but they come to an understanding. And I think this is like a very, very good dialogue in general.
Yeah. And Ariana points out in her notes in the doc that it's like watching a family fight and it's painful because they know how to hit where it hurts. And that is the worst and best part of this entire scene, is just, you know, Peggy really digging in to something about Jarvis and not knowing the one detail that Jarvis is still holding onto us, like, as a secret that he has not told Peggy or anyone, even Anna, that they can't have kids. And, you know, there's that. And then, you know, he throws in that everyone around you dies, and it's just, yes, like, it's just layering on, and they both know when to apologize and step back and say, I was wrong to say that, and I know it was wrong, and I know you, like, that information, though it's the truth, I should not have spoken to it in this moment. And I think that it's a very real relationship, and that's what you go for, even though you're not intentionally going for it. It's just, you know this person so well that you know what will hurt them at the right moment.
And, well, you know the things that they're kind of running from too.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I've seen this before. I've watched the show before, but when Jarvis said the everybody around you dies, I gasped, like, just in shock, because I forgot, like, the impact of that, because he's like invoking the name of Steve in that moment, and it's like, you did not go there. Like, my brain was like, oh, Jarvis, like, no, because it's like siblings. It's knowing that one thing that will never be gone, the one thing she can never let go of, and he went there, and it just, oh yeah. But in that moment, I was just like, Jarvis, how dare you.
And it's not just Steve, it's also Michael, and it's also other people, like, the both during the war and after the war, which is why I really like what she said after, because honestly, that had never really occurred to me, the fact that he was coming at this from a very privileged kind of position in his own ignorance, you know, as she said. And I thought it was just very profound.
I absolutely loved this scene, more so, I mean, this always happens with rewatchable. I appreciate these sorts of things after all of the discussions that we've had. And I think that this discussion that they had, and then going immediately into them tricking two thugs, and like working together in that way, it made that really satisfying for me, more so than it would have been, I guess, maybe a few episodes ago, something like that.
Yeah, to stay on brand with being a Thor enthusiast, yeah. This was very much reminiscent to me of when, you know, Loki and Thor are having a heart-to-heart in the elevator, and then they immediately are, like, going to get help.
Get help!
And I just can imagine Peggy being like, we're not doing get help.
Are you kidding? Peggy would be the one throwing Jarvis. Let's
absolutely. So that's probably why they were like, no. Peggy's like, no, I have to be the damsel because I need to get up and kick their butts.
And like, no one, I was thinking through that too. Like, no one would suspect if Jarvis passed out, because she's a lady, so she's got a weaker constitution. So she's
but really, Jarvis would be the one to pass out from heat exhaustion.
100%. Yes, agreed. But the thugs don't know that, you know, it's fine. So good. I love them so much. And it helps. We've been seeing some videos outside of, obviously, the show of Hayley Atwell and James Darcy together. And you can just tell how much they care about each other and in real life. And it comes through in these sorts of moments as well. All right. So they kick those goons' butts. And Peggy makes sure that Jarvis gets back to Anna's bedside, because that's where he really should be. He doesn't put up an argument again, because she kind of pointed out to him that he finds what she does adventures and he should just be with his wife for now. So he goes back to Anna, and they have a really interesting scene as well. Like, Anna seems to be recovering well. She's obviously not even close to being 100%, but she's asking about the well-being of everyone else, because she genuinely cares about everyone else. She asks about Dr. Wilkes. She asks about Peggy. And she also was getting, through his responses, she's getting a read on Jarvis as well. Did it feel in character for Anna at this moment to tell Jarvis that being by her bedside is not where he should be or where she wants him to be? Was that something that was surprising to anyone?
No, I think she's doing what like a good partner does, you know? She's fine now, or at least she thinks she's fine before she finds out. Who knows how she'll react to that. But she also knows how much Peggy matters, and she's also invested in the success of the plan. So I guess I think it was the right thing for her to do, even though I don't think it's the right thing for Jarvis to leave, since he's proven himself to not be good in the situation.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it's very on brand for the conversation she had with Jarvis the episode before, standing at the car with, like, you know, I know you need to do this, Peggy needs you, but I'm going to stand here and wring my hands. Like, it's, I am going to worry. Mm-hmm. So I think it is on brand for Anna to say, like, you know, I'm here and I'm safe and I'm on the mend, and, you know, she doesn't know the big, you know, the big secret at this point, but she's still going to survive this. And who knows if Peggy can survive without Jarvis. So I see why Anna's sending him back. Like, you know, you guys had a falling out. You need to go, though. Like, she needs you. And so I think it's perfectly in character for her.
And was it weird to have a cutaway? Because I couldn't remember how the scene ended, and I thought we got a reaction from Anna, but they end up cutting away before Jarvis is able to tell her. I wasn't a huge fan of that, as I would have liked to have seen them coming to terms with that in person, or like being able to see that on screen. Was that a disappointment, Or was it something that kind of felt right after this moment of her supporting Jarvis? And then just cutting away from something like that, that would kind of change the moment.
For me, it felt right because I think we like talked about this a little bit last week about how we don't really know how they feel about having kids, whether they discussed this. We know they wanted a dog and that's adorable, but we don't really know that part of their marriage. We weren't welcomed into that conversation, and that's fine. There, it wasn't room for it. We don't know what they, you know, we know that Jarvis goes home and he like helps with the laundry, and like, we don't know what their domestic life is behind doors too much. So I think that that conversation needed to stay in that part of their relationship behind closed doors, whatever they just had previously discussed about wanting kids or having a family or their dreams of like moving away. We got a little bit more here where, like, you know, Anna says like, we don't go on vacation. You don't like vacation like that. We got a little bit more of like how their lives work, but to give them that moment, I think off screen, I liked a lot. I liked that we pulled away and, you know, that conversation lives with them. And like, it's up to them to tell us what that part of their marriage is.
That makes sense. I take your point. They are very private about those sorts of things, to the point where we didn't even meet Anna until this season.
Right.
Yeah. Makes sense. Okay. Well, while Jarvis went back to Anna's bedside, Peggy goes back to the SSR in what is my favorite scene of the episode that wasn't taken by other people. And she goes, marches right into the chief's office basically and beats up Vernon Masters, which is amazing. Like, she gives zero fucks at this point. She's beating him up. And then all of her friends come in and they're basically like, hey, we're okay. It's fine. To which they kind of tell her the plan as it stands at that moment. And in how they're talking, you get a sense that everyone is compromising something, and it's really hard for Peggy to hear. With keeping in mind how Peggy has been operating, as well as, I think it was Nurse Brack who pointed out last week, Dottie's line about Peggy burying her head in the sand about the things that kind of go on and the compromises that are made. Was this scene to me played as a sort of turning point, because even Sousa's on board with like compromising in order to catch the villain. And Peggy is kind of the holdout. I'm not sure how we're supposed to read the scene, but to me it kind of felt like a turning point in Peggy's character, or in just like the turn of the SSR itself. But I was wondering how everyone else, or Kristen, how do you feel about the fact that all of these people are making these compromises? Does it feel like a natural thing to do, or does it feel like they're losing something in the process?
It's kind of hard to keep track of what is like the right thing to do in all of these scenarios, because stopping Whitney is first and foremost like the most important, because she poses the greatest threat, like physical threat, basically. So like, it doesn't surprise me that Sousa and, you know, Amberly or whatever, like that they would say, okay, let's stop her first. Like, let's go with Jack's crazy plan and stop her first. And then we'll worry about the McMaster's guy, and we'll worry about the rest of it after that, because she could hurt a lot more people than this guy is currently can with a gun, you know? Mm-hmm. So I can see why he would prioritize, okay, let's do this first. But with seeing like how Jack kind of does like two 180s in a matter of moments, and then you're like, wait, whose side is he on? He's kind of on his own side. He's got this going on and this going on. Like, it does get really confusing as to where the priority should lie. And what the SSR is even, like, what their goal is now. Because we've watched Peggy fighting you know, we're with Peggy. So watching her this whole season working against all of them while Jack is working another angle and technically working against her. And it's like, what even is the goal here? And I think it still is to stop Whitney first. And yes, problematic people like McMasters and all of them will be dealt with. But because stopping her is priority one, I can see why compromising their choices, compromising a little bit to stop her first makes sense.
Does anyone else have, I guess, opinions one way or another? Like, I get the hierarchy, and I'm with you, Kristen. It's very complicated and layered, and she is obviously priority one. Just in all of our conversations about Jack and Hydra and all of these things, newbies coming at this, was Peggy always someone who seemed like she is uncompromising in the same way that maybe Steve Rogers was? Or does this sort of compromising feel more natural for her because she's not a Steve Rogers Captain America?
I'm not ignoring you. I'm trying to think.
Oh, no, it's fine. I also wasn't ignoring before either. There was a plane passing by.
I honestly, I don't know, because I feel like we can't judge, put Peggy and Steve in the same, like they're not different ends of like a spectrum, I guess. So I don't know if I would say that. I don't know how to respond to this. I'm just not going to, because I don't know what I'm trying to get at.
No, I mean, that's fair. I'm not quite sure what I'm trying to get at either, just in that, like, it struck me as a weird scene.
Yeah, I definitely agree on that point. It is a scene that I don't think I've completely unpacked yet. And I think that's mainly because the rest of the episode sort of plays out with like, yeah, they're all coming together, but then no one is on the same page at the end of the day. Like it's all for naught. Like we don't know whose motivations lie where until everyone's holding guns at each other, at the car at the end of the scene. Episode. So I think like for Peggy to come in and just sort of like, you know, Peggy has not been receptive to anything that's been going on in the SSR, I would say pretty much this whole season.
Mm-hmm.
I think her coming to California to work with Sousa was just, it wasn't even her idea, really. Like she's here now and making it work and things are going along and, you know, but even this office is a little bit better for her, this SSR office, but now, you know, the offices and the organization has been infiltrated and they're not working. She hasn't been working with the SSR as an agency, like a big overarching agency, most of this season. She's been pulling team players from it and using and tapping into the resources that it affords her, but it's not like she's not going back and filing a report about anything that's been going on. It's been
right. We haven't met anyone in that office.
Yeah, it's been very much off the books for Sousa as well. And I think that this detachment from organization and, you know, being part of something where you're going by the books, sometimes you need to go around the books a little bit to get done what you need to get done. But at the end of the day, you're giving a briefing or you're telling your chief or you're receiving accommodation because you worked within a system. I think that's kind of gone. So for Peggy to come in, she's there with that mindset. She's like, I'm not really working for anyone at this point. I'm just working to get this done because there is a threat and it needs to be taken care of. And then to come in and have almost like, it's almost like bureaucracy comes back and slaps her in the face a little bit.
Mm.
Like, here are the plans that we made. This is the, like, sort of to Kristen's point, this is the hierarchy of the decision-making. This is what X, Y, and Z man has to say who are either just getting involved or just showing interest or deciding to listen for once. and now this is what we're going after. And I think that she's like a little bit caught off guard. And so, but so is everyone else. Tensions in that room are very high. No one wants to listen to the others, but they all agree there's one mission, which is to stop Whitney and figure out what the zero matter thing is before Wilkes, the ticking time bomb, goes off, or an actual bomb goes off, or they set off a bomb themselves because no one is actually on the same page. So there's a lot of distrust. There's a lot of things that people have been rallying against the whole season that they all need to compromise and work with, whether that's Red Foreman or, I know his name is Masters, but like,
it's fine. Yeah. Red Foreman.
Yeah. Whether it's him, whether it's Jack and Sousa getting together, you know, they have that exchange earlier in the episode where it's like, do you trust me? And he says, not at all. And
yeah. I wanted to go back to that because I think that's interesting and it carries through directly right. into the scene.
So
yeah.
like all of these bad threads from the whole season are carrying through to this moment of everyone coming together and being like, I don't trust this. No one in that room is completely on the same page. Not even Peggy and Sousa, like as closely as they've been working together, they have very different ideas of where they're going and how they're going to get there. So, and there's, whereas Peggy and Jarvis, we just saw this like great open communication here. It's very like closed communication. It's just like, nope, here's the plan. And then as everyone is like set in the plan, they realize that everyone's set in a different plan.
Jack has 35 plans and he has told no one.
Yeah. And Jack is very much like, I know what I'm doing. And yeah. Here's how I'm going to do it. I'm going to cut the fuel line and then take Masters prisoner. And then I'm going to dump him and then blow everyone up and maybe get another medal and write up in the paper.
Well, see, this is Jack, like, getting revenge for everyone kind of double crossing him this whole season. But also it's kind of like, I don't know, it feels too smart. Like, he's done so many dumb things this season. Okay. And suddenly he's this mastermind and like, okay, this Jack, I can get behind him being chief because it makes a lot of sense. He's like really smart. He knows people's strengths and weaknesses. He's, you know, he's manipulating the situation to work out in a certain way. But I'm like, where was this Jack the whole time?
I think that kind of like goes back to in the scene what we were talking about on the last episode when we were so frustrated with him. It's just like, he has this inferiority complex. So maybe he's always been this smart, but afraid to like do anything with it. And maybe he is finally just being like, you know what? Enough is enough. No one is above me because this whole organization is crap. So I'm finally just going to do what needs to be done. And maybe he's swallowing some of his pride. I don't think that's possible, but he's probably like, you know, just being like, or tapping into it, maybe he's just finally being like, no, this is who I am. I am just going to handle it because I can't be jerked around anymore or try to follow protocol or worry about who I'm disappointing, because at this point he's driven everyone away and no one really cares. So when no one cares, what are you going to do? Whatever's best that you can come up with in your mind.
And be super charming about it the whole time.
Yeah, like, oh, God. I did appreciate that, though. Like, that little bit of a role reversal where he can just charm his way into any situation. Like, that came, what annoyed me about that in, like, last week's discussion now came back, like, and I was like, oh, I like it. You're using those beautiful blue eyes to get what you want.
Yeah.
Like, he does it in the middle of the desert with that agent. He's very suave there. He does it in this room. He does it with Whitney multiple times. It's just this, it's hard to believe that this episode had all of these really, this is going to sound terrible. It's hard to believe this episode had all of these really great and really interesting pieces in it, because each one of these things, the musical, the argument and discussion between Peggy and Jarvis, and all the stuff with Jack, like even just two of those together could have filled an entire episode. But somehow it feels like they balance this well enough where we have all three. And to me, each of these things is really satisfying to watch. especially the Jack stuff, because he's been slightly bumbling before, but now we get to see him, like Brittany, you pointed out, like he's hitting his stride now. Like he's maybe swallowing some pride, but really kind of coming into the person that he can be, whether that's all for good, not as much for good, remains to be seen, but he's really coming into his own at this point, and it's fascinating to watch.
I sort of like to think of it as like him embracing his inner Peggy, because
yes,
because up until then he had been kind of letting Red Foreman lead him around like a dog, like, here, I can give you this, I can give you this, if you do this, I'll do this. Like, he's just kind of been following along, following the leader, doing as he's being told and like being promised all of these wonderful things. And he is just, you know, eating it up. And now, and you've seen parts of Jack be like, I don't know if this is the best choice, but this guy's telling me that this is all going to work out and that this is what I need, so I'm going to do it. And like in this episode, he embraces that quality that Peggy has. That's like, okay, no, I'll just get it myself. Like, I don't need you to give it to me. I'm going to do what I need to do, and I'm going to get it myself. And it's really what he kind of just chooses to do in this episode. And you're right. Like, it kind of comes out of nowhere, because Jack hasn't really shown us a lot of this, but he kind of sees like, all right, maybe nobody is looking out for me, and I need to look out for me, and here's what we're going to do. And then he starts using his pretty blue eyes and gets what he wants.
Well, and how solid is his plan? I mean, objectively, it makes sense to take out all of the weapons, whether they're people or otherwise. But at the same time, like, he is, Peggy reminds him, he is part of the SSR. So what, it's interesting to see him kind of come into his own, but it's not like he's coming into his own as an agent. He's coming into his own as like judge, jury, executioner, almost. And it's hard to decide whether or not his idea with telling Samberly to create a bomb is a good one or the best way to go. Because, I mean, the people that they're going after are very dangerous, and like Dottie, can slip through their fingers easily if they go with the bureaucracy of agencies and all that. So was his idea at the end of the day, it was the best idea that they came up with, but is it a good idea?
I mean, that's basically the question, isn't it? I mean, Peggy pulls a gun on him because obviously she doesn't think it's the best idea, but Jack thinks it's the best idea. And so it's like time to see who has the right way out of this. Like, they've gotten themselves into a corner. They've got all of their biggest threats in a building, and there's a bomb, and it's now been armed, and there's, you know, the blockers turned off. So who wins now? Is it, you know, is Peggy going to be able to convince Jack that this isn't the way to go, that there's another path, and that they can, you know, get everything that they can figure, they know there is a way to get everything they want, everything they need. They can save Wilkes, and they can, you know, nullify Whitney and her crazy dark matter, and they can put Red Foreman, you know, back in his place. And, you know, like, there, if she can convince him that this isn't the way out, then, you know, then that will be the Peggy of it all. But like, if Jack ultimately believes that this is the only way, then, you know, maybe it will end that way. We don't know. At least not till next episode.
Well, I mean, we don't even know if it's the end of the episode cuts to,
yeah,
it's exploding before the bomb is able to explode. So Jack's plan doesn't even get executed all of the way. But Wilkes refuses. So to back up, Wilkes refuses to leave with Peggy. He kind of locks himself in the room, or locks her out. I'm not sure how that lock worked. And he walks, so Wilkes walks into the room where Whitney is kind of trying to kill Masters. And it's hard to tell, at least on my end, what his motivation for doing so was. If it was just like a warning, like, hey, this is happening to me. If it's just him trying to find out what's going on within the warehouse. Or did Wilkes know that he was some sort of bomb and he was putting himself in the middle or was going to Whitney to explode and like try to take her out?
Or was it
like a solid reading on that?
Or was it the dark matter?
Yeah.
Pulling itself toward the only other source of dark matter in the area.
Yeah.
Like he logically was walking there, but like, was the dark matter kind of calling to itself or like, we don't know.
Newbies, any theories on that or any special way that you read that?
Well, when Wilkes locks himself like in the room without Peggy, I assumed that he was going to like use himself to just absorb everyone and then give in to whatever darkness he was like kind of feeling, in, you know, the back of the car, and then it would be done. Like that it was just like,
that was the opposite of how I read it.
How did you read it?
I just read it like, oh, he just doesn't want to be closer to the people because he's scared of what will happen. So he's just going to go and cower in the room for a bit longer.
I also thought that because, like, I mean, the bigger, like, metropolis area, like, not mainly, like, Whitney or anyone, like, Peggy, for instance, but, like, the bigger people of the area. Because, like, that was his big thing about not coming back from the desert. He was like, I don't want to be around, like, you know, you can't bring me to a populated area. So when he comes into that room, though, at the end, I thought that, like, maybe he made the decision to just stop this. Like, yeah, they'll never figure it out, like what's going on, but at the same time he won't be able to be used as a weapon if he just like went into the void, followed the void voice, if you will.
Yeah, man.
But I'm not sure what his motivations are, because like we've been saying, we don't really know what anyone's plans are on both sides or every side. There's not even two sides to say.
All the sides, all the people, all the moments, because they keep changing moment to moment as well. But we'll have to wait and see what happens in the next episode, in the last episode.
Well, I do have a question. So is anyone frustrated by all of this? Because
I think what way?
In like, so this is a penultimate episode. So next week is the finale. There may or may not be cliffhangers. No one, I don't know because I've never seen it, but you know,
they didn't know they were canceled.
Yeah. So we're building to this finale. So of course there needs to be questions, but are there too many questions, too many different sides? Overall, my opinion is that this was probably the best episode of the season. Mm-hmm. I think that there was a lot of progress made in a lot of areas. And so for there to be, you know, at minimum seven different plans going on right now, I'm actually okay with it. I think because it was balanced so well with resolving so much pent-up tension in other areas, or revealing at least the complicatedness of things not being able to be resolved and tied up with a bow. But normally, I was actually kind of shocked by that, because normally I think that had it the episode been written differently or shot differently or handled differently with the way that these characters have been like moving this whole season, this episode and the end result of it would have frustrated me to no end. Like I would have just been completely off board with like, I'm like, just make a decision. I don't, give me a black and white visual of who's bad, who's good, who wants what. But I think I was pleasantly surprised with how okay I was going into the finale.
Yeah. And I think for, at least in my experience with a lot of television shows, the penultimate episode in a season is usually one of the weakest, because it's just like a wave that's like ebbing before it's about to come forward. So like, it doesn't necessarily solve problems. It doesn't necessarily do a lot. It only like puts pieces in place. But I think, like you were saying, I think for sure, this is probably the best episode of this season. because it does a lot with all of the characters and in a way that's satisfying, even if it is still doing that sort of ebb before the flow.
Yeah, and I'm kind of... Oh, go ahead, Nassim.
Oh, and they were able to fit in a musical sequence. So that's a feat in and of itself.
Yeah.
Which I think I'll touch on this like a little bit later when we get to our predictions. But like, I'm nervous for the finale because I have a feeling that something's going to happen and I don't want it to, even though if you asked me in the beginning of the season, this is my number one complaint. So of the show in general. So like, I'm like dreading something that I originally wanted. You know, if that makes sense. I'll talk about it more in a little bit. But
yeah, I want to know what this is because I can't remember.
I think it's going to be Jack dying.
Oh, I mean, that's not my thing, but that's okay.
But maybe he will. Anyway, that's later.
That's later. Any other thoughts about this episode and all of the stuff that happened in, what, 42 minutes? It felt like so much longer, but in the best way. All right, then let's get into our favorite scenes and favorite lines and talk about all of the specific things we loved in this episode that I'm correct in saying we all really enjoyed and actually loved. My favorite scene, like I mentioned before, was Peggy going into Sousa's office and just going to town on Vernon Master's face because she gives zero fucks at this point and like is just over him. Kristen, what was your favorite scene?
Okay, so there are three supremely great scenes in this episode, and then there's a fourth person on this podcast who had to pick something else. So I love everybody else's scenes, but when forced to pick a fourth one, I actually really like the end and the build-up from Jack standing outside the waste management building or whatever.
Facility.
Yeah, facility, thank you, with the detonator, and, like, he's clicking it, and he had made his decision. His plan was coming to fruition. He was happy. He clicks the detonator, and it doesn't work, and he just goes, I think he goes, Carter,
yep.
Or something like that, yep. And then turns around and gets to the car, and we go through all of that with the, you know, Peggy pulling the gun on him, and, you know, it ends with Peggy pulling the gun on him. I like that whole sequence quite a bit because it's so, like, 50s gangster, like, oh, the bomb doesn't work. Oh, I know who did it. Go to the car. This happens. You know, like, it's every good final penultimate episode sequence that you could ever want, because you know where it's leading, you know it's going to come to a confrontation between him and Peggy and Sousa, and you know, like, it, I love the tension build, and so I love a good tension build, so in that moment, like, that whole build at the end there was really, really well done.
See, that was a good scene. What are you talking about? That was a great scene, Kristen.
It was good.
Nassim, what was your favorite scene?
The dancing. I mean, that's like a very easy choice. I just love the dancing. I was watching in wonder the whole time. Yeah. It's just so fun to see it, like the same characters with the same personalities just do something very different. It's like a fanfic within a bigger show.
And they're also good at dancing, apparently, because they're Dancing with the Stars. But no, I loved it too. And I also liked that, like you said, it looks dreamy and just really fun. It looks like how I want my 30th birthday to be. I want to have like a 1940s themed party where everybody's like in 40s clothing and like dancing to swing stuff and big band. And this is basically my dream 30th birthday, which means it's not going to happen, but that's fine. At least I get to see it on screen. Brittany, your favorite scene?
My favorite scene was obviously the entire confrontation in the desert between Jarvis and Peggy. I loved it. I thought it was very well written, and they really just leaned in on everything that I wanted to happen and did not think was going to happen in this season. So good job, team
Sorry I ever doubted you. But I've been burned before.
I understand. It's okay.
And in terms of favorite lines, mine is a short exchange between Peggy and Jack because they're always calling each other out on things, which is very enjoyable. But my favorite one from this episode was Peggy saying, "I don't know about you, but I'm not in the habit of climbing into bed with snakes." And Jack responds, "I couldn't care less who you're climbing into bed with."
God, if I still ship them, this will be the moment that everything changed.
Yes.
Oh, man. Kristen, your favorite line, please.
There were two, like, so blatantly obvious little quotes in this episode. They both came from Wilkes, and this one is the one I chose. He looks at Peggy and just goes, "You're very stubborn." And I just laughed my ass off because I was like, are you kidding me? Like, you're just now getting this? Like,
did you just meet her?
But, like, I'm sorry. Where have you been all season? Because that's pretty much, like, one of her most defining character traits is, like, she is stubborn. Once she knows better, she's not going to just roll over and die. Like, she knows what she wants, and she's not giving up. So, yeah, I just thought that was hilarious.
That's a good one. I like that a lot. Nassim, give us your favorite line, please.
Mine's a sad one, as usual. When she goes, "You can go on in your life knowing nothing of loss." That was very, very heavy and very, very true. Even though, I mean, there was a certain degree of loss, but not quite the same type of loss that he has experienced. And I thought that was a very powerful line.
I agree. I saw that, or I heard that one, and I was almost going to put it down, but you got it before I did. So,
yes. I was going to go with the, I was going to go with this as my favorite scene, but then Brittany put it in, so then I had to make it my line.
We're just all very cutthroat today. Brittany, will you please give us your favorite line?
"I'm sorry, you're just not right for the Arbok Theatrical Agency." And then Rose punches her. Oh my gosh, it's so good. She's such an MVP. I wish we had more of her.
Yeah, she's wonderful. So great. Oh, and then earlier when Samberly is trying to tell Rose about his heroics in front of Vernon Masters, and Rose is just not having it.
Oh,
so hard. So it's like, yes, I understand this a lot. All right, well, those were our favorite scenes, our favorite lines, and our thoughts about this episode. I mean, I guess it's not a spoiler alert, but we loved it. And so we want to know how you felt about this episode. Please, please, please get in contact with us. You can email us at rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com. You can tweet at us at re_watchable. You can come find us on Tumblr. We're at rewatchablepodcast.tumblr.com. And while you're doing all of that, or perhaps while you're listening to me right now, you can leave us an iTunes review or rate us 5 stars on iTunes. It's super easy. You can do it from your app. You can pause this and go to your computer and just type up a really nice thing about us all. The good thing about iTunes reviews and ratings is that they allow our podcast to be seen by other people who might also be interested in Agent Carter or Buffy, or just rewatching shows or watching cool shows for the first time. So you could be helping out someone else and not even knowing it. I mean, that's pretty great. And if you do all of that, you will also get an incentive. If you rate us 5 stars on iTunes this week, then Karen will shower you in rainbows because today is Pride. And I feel like that is really great. I could imagine her showering you in rainbows and she would be very happy about it.
Most definitely.
Most definitely, yeah. So if you would like to be showered in rainbows, please leave us a review. And then once you're done doing all of that and getting in contact with us that way, come join our Facebook group. We love having conversations over there. We're constantly posting fun things from Tumblr or weird things we come across. Like I said, I have a photo in there from my adventures in New York. It's just really good fun, and we're excited to grow our little community over there as well. And as a reminder, the name of that group is Rewatchables Rewinders. Just search for that on Facebook, and we should pop up right away. You can't miss us. We have like a photo of Agent Carter as our photo. So you know you're in the right place when you see Peg. Before we wrap up for today, we do want to highlight some listener feedback that we got back from people who did contact us. So thank you ahead of time to everyone here. Let me see. Nassim, would you like to get this first tweet, please?
Yes. Yes. Okay. I'm ready. So Melanie says, I hope you do Warehouse 13 at some point. Great mix of camp and drama, cute sci-fi, a female slash female. I don't know how you read that out loud. I've only ever read it.
Yeah,
I've heard it. In romance.
Slash F ship that is so fanon, it's pretty much off-screen canon. Oh no, now I'm going to rewatch it on my own.
I don't know if I've heard of Warehouse 13. It kind of rings a bell. Has anyone else watched this?
I've heard of it. I know, like, I definitely know of it. Oh, is that the one about... Wait a minute. I think that's the spinoff of Eureka, which I recently watched and loved. But Warehouse 13, I don't think is available online anywhere right now because I went looking for it and couldn't find it. But I have heard good things about it.
We shall have to add it to our list.
Definitely.
Thanks, Melanie. All right. Let me see. We are going to start pulling in some feedback from our Facebook group as well. We're not going to pull in everything because we want people to join, but we do want to highlight some really cool conversations or cool points that are going on over there. Kristen, would you like to take this first post or this first comment from Amy in the Facebook group?
Sure. Yes. Amy says, now some thoughts on the rest of the episode. One, you thought of it too. I'm not even that big of an Iron Man obsessive, but Tony was the first thing I thought of when I first heard there would be no little Jarvises. Before any other implications crossed my mind, I thought, ah, so Tony basically became the child they never had. It's kind of an interesting dynamic to think on. Two, this is probably the biggie, but I didn't want to put it first, so it's a little hidden, even though it's not a spoiler exactly. I heard a theory about the M. Carter file once that I so 100% believe in now that I forget it's not canon yet. And also, I get so upset at the lack of third season. The theory was that M doesn't stand for Margaret, but Michael, and they were totally going to build up to the reveal in season 3 that Michael's death had been faked so he could do super top secret and apparently war crime-ish stuff. And if he was still alive, that would also more easily explain the existence of Sharon. Yes? Oh, we need to get on their case about bringing season 3 to Disney Plus. Definitely need to get on their case. I don't think I had ever heard any of this, but that sounds really interesting. Well, I was so mad that the show was ending that I just kind of stopped paying any attention to what was going on.
I understand. Saving your heart from all the pain.
Pretty much. So I just stopped digging into things. But no, that's all really, really interesting and makes so much sense.
I mean, the M on the file, I can't remember if anyone pointed that out, that it could have been anyone other than Margaret. Did anyone point that out last week?
I don't think so.
Carter's not like a super uncommon last name.
True.
So I feel like it's possible that there could have been another M. Carter that worked for them at some point. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They could have like doctored a little bit or changed something to make it seem like it was Peggy, but it wasn't, you know.
Yeah, someone completely random. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know. Very interesting.
Very interesting, but we can all agree, yes, please, for season 3 on Disney Plus. I need it so bad.
Definitely.
After people see the finale, I feel like you will need it too. But we're not going to talk about that right now because we have one more piece of feedback. Let me see. Brittany, will you please get this comment from Rachel?
Sure. So Rachel said regarding the Veronica Mars reboot article that was written by Kendra telling people, now's the time to watch Veronica Mars. She says, yes, I need to rewatch. I had to interrupt my listen of Rewatchables Veronica Mars episodes to catch up on Agent Carter. Fair. Struggle's real. Back in the day, my laptop desktop picture was a picture of Veronica and Logan. Gotta love those two. And breaking news out of the ATX Festival, which yes. the Veronica Mars panel just happened on. All the seasons will be available on Hulu starting July 1st.
Woo! So
now really is the time to watch Veronica Mars.
It's all I've never seen it.
Sorry, go ahead.
I've never seen Veronica Mars, so my time has come.
Your time has come. And I mean, if there's any, if there's any show to pause Veronica Mars rewatch with watching Agent Carter, Agent Carter is a good reason to pause your Veronica Mars rewatch. But also, I think I love Veronica Mars even a little bit more than I love Agent Carter. So everyone should watch Veronica Mars. And I'm excited for you to rewatch Rachel. I also actually have a picture of Veronica and Logan. It's the cover, I guess, of, well, it's still Entertainment Weekly, sort of. But when they were doing the movie and they had a photo shoot and they had a cover of Entertainment Weekly with the two of them standing next to each other with marshmallows in their mouth, or like looking like they're going to kiss and they have marshmallows in their mouth. That is the background on the, I guess, like the screen or the console in my car, which is also named Veronica. So I'm with you on that. Love me some Veronica and Logan. But this episode is not about Veronica Mars, as much as I would love to talk about Veronica Mars again. This is about Agent Carter. And I mean, next week is not only the season finale, but also ends up being the series finale. And so it is now time for Brittany's Brainstorms and Nassim's Narrative for the Agent Carter Season 2, Episode 10 finale, Hollywood Ending. Do you guys have any theories, fun things you want to see happen, people you want to see come back, people you don't want to see? What do you think is going to happen?
Well, to pick up on the thread that I left dangling there earlier.
Yes, let's do it.
I feel like Howard's coming back and I don't want him to. It's going to feel very like Deus Ex Machia, like we couldn't do it without his brilliant mind, and like you would have been fine, I think. And because Dominic Cooper is like a special guest star, it's a season finale. He's been kind of like, you know, hinted at that he's still like working with them, which is all great. And like, you know, that's fine. But I haven't missed Howard. I did very much so in the beginning of the season because I just feel like he's, you know, he couldn't commit to doing the whole show, and that's fine. But I feel like he's going to have to come back for a finale, and I don't really want him to. But also, it's a Hollywood ending, and Howard is a producer / director / developer of films right now. So what kind of Hollywood ending are we shooting for here? Literally shooting for? Are we shooting a movie? Or, you know, will that come into play? I don't know, but I feel like he's coming back, and I'm not too thrilled about it. Even though I don't know if it's happening or not. Like, I'm already disappointed.
I mean, you know how television works, so I feel like this theory is pretty solid.
We got so much of the characters this episode that I feel like we're going to lose momentum should Howard come back. And I don't know what's going to happen with Whitney and this whole Zero Matter thing, because I'm still very confused about what it actually does. And if we're actually going to get answers, or everyone's going to be sucked into the void and we're just never going to speak about it again. It's going to be one of those files locked away.
Don't question the science.
Yeah.
Nassim, you have any theories or anything you want to see?
I have a death toll.
Okay.
So is that the right word? I don't know if that's the right word. No, isn't that like a bell? Okay, whatever. I have a list of people who I think will die. I think Whitney's going to die, probably by launching herself into an exploding Wilkes, who is also going to die. So she's going to want it so bad, she's going to like throw herself into the explosion, hoping that it's going to give her power, but instead it's just going to kill her because she's not worthy. And Wilkes is going to die by letting himself get overtaken by the power. And I think one more person has to die. So I'm thinking it's Jack, except I feel like people like Jack too much, so they were probably hoping to keep him there for season 3. But I feel like we're definitely going to need a real tearjerker. And it's going to have to be someone very unexpected. So I think it's going to be Jack. Even though I don't necessarily want him to die, but it would maybe like one last act of heroism would like redeem him for what he's done. But I think he's still fairly in like Peggy's side. Well, whatever that is. I think ultimately he'll agree with Peggy. And I hope Peggy gets a promotion. And I don't think she and Susan are going to get together, but there's going to be like a spark. Like maybe this time she'll accept to go for drinks after work.
Oh, as a mirror to the first season finale?
Yeah, where she was like, no. So now I think maybe she'll accept. But I still think that Susan's kind of a mess. Like who gets engaged with someone when he loves someone else? But yeah. Those are my predictions.
Danielle, I'm sure you'll be proud that I kept looking at the title of the finale and I was like, this looks familiar, and not just because it's the Agent Carter finale and this is the title of it, but because of Anna and the Apocalypse.
There's no such thing as a Hollywood ending.
And I was like, Danielle will be so proud that I made the connection, because it took me a minute, but I was like, wait. Yeah, no.
So proud. I'm going to go and sing that song after we're done. I'll put it on repeat and alternate between the Agent Carter musical number and Hollywood ending, just because.
Why not?
Exactly. Why not? All right. Well, we're going into the season and the series finale, and I'm very excited to hear what everyone thinks about it and whether or not you would want more Agent Carter after that. But until next week, until that discussion happens, I'm Danielle.
I'm Kristen.
I'm Nassim.
And I'm Brittany.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.
I don't want Agent Carter to end.
I know.
I don't either. I really like it.
I'm so happy to hear you say that.